Hello and welcome to this Endo Life. I'm Jessica Duffin. I'm an endo warrior and endo health coach, and this podcast is all about living and thriving with endometriosis. As always, this podcast is here for educational purposes only. Please consult your medical practitioner before making any nutritional changes or bringing in any supplements. Before we dive into today's episode, I want to give a shout out to my lovely sponsors at BU, and I wanted to tell you about their new bath bombs, which are naturally made and contain beautiful essential oils, and their peppermint and eucalyptus essential oils bath bomb is doing so well right now with endometriosis community. They're getting loads of feedback about it. And, you know, if you love the patches themselves, you're going to love the bath bombs, because essentially it's the patch in a bath bomb. So, you know, if you're on your period or if you're in pain, you could have a bath with some of the bath bombs or one of them. I don't know, you could have multiple if you want. And then get out the bath, maybe rub in some CBD balm and put your patch on top, which is what a lot of people are feeding back that they're doing. So I would love to do that, but I don't have a bath, so I can't. But if you have a bath, then, you know, I think these new bath bombs could be a lovely way to help alleviate some of your pain. So if you'd like to check them out, you can go to BU, which is buonline.co.uk, and you can also order them from anywhere in the world on cultbeauty.co.uk, and they deliver worldwide. Hi, everyone. So before we get started with this week's podcast episode, I wanted to tell you about a brand new freebie that I'm really excited about, the Flare Up Prevention Mini Email Course. From Monday the 4th of March, you'll receive a weekly email with education on one specific strategy which can help reduce the frequency and or severity of your flare-ups, whether they're random or they come like clockwork every period. Now, the caveat here is that it's not your fault that you have flare-ups and that you have endo. And doing, you know, X, Y, Z does not guarantee that you won't have flare-ups. But what we know is that there are certain drivers behind endo pain. Drivers like inflammatory chemicals such as prostaglandins, pelvic floor dysfunction, and an upregulated nervous system. There are tools and strategies we can use to address these problems and therefore may lower your chances of flare-ups or reduce the intensity of them. However, there are many contributing factors to flare-ups, and your pain may be more down to one thing than another, so some tools in this freebie may work less for you than other tools. If you don't experience relief with this freebie, it's not because you didn't try hard enough or you didn't do it correctly. Endo is an unpredictable beast, and every person is different with their own unique root causes and endo challenges. But what I can say is that every single strategy in this freebie is evidence-based and tried and tested, and they will help your body better fight endo and generally support your overall health and well-being. And despite my extensive disclaimer, I've seen these strategies literally change lives. They've taken clients from not being able to stand to having meals out on their periods. So if you're up for it, it could really be worth a chance. As I said, we get started on March the 4th. If you hear this message after March the 4th, don't worry, you can still sign up and I'll catch you up with all the emails. The link to sign up is in the show notes. Hopefully I'll see you there. Hi everyone. So today I am recording from Albania again, and I think the goats and the sheep are on the move. So you might hear a lot of bells and sheep in the background, but we're just going to roll with it. So this week, we're staying on our theme of hormone testing, and today we're looking at estrogen. There are a number of signs to look out for with estrogen dominance or excess, and they pretty much all fall under the PMS umbrella. But I wanted to take you through a few telltale signs that I often see with endo clients. Number one is clotty periods. As we explored last week in our progesterone episode, Estrogen has proliferation properties. So in short, this means it helps our cells to multiply and increase in number. And this is why estrogen plays such a key role in puberty and the development of breasts, pubic hair, hips, etc. These proliferation properties also extend to the endometrial tissue of the uterine lining, essentially the tissue that makes up the spongy layer in your uterus. As your estrogen levels rise in your follicular phase and into ovulation, your uterine lining thickens as well. If you have elevated estrogen levels, as in literally you have too much, this could cause excessive thickening of the uterine lining. If you have normal levels of estrogen, but your progesterone levels are too low once you're in your luteal phase, this means estrogen will be able to happily continue to fluff up and increase the uterine lining without progesterone coming along to counteract it. This again means you may end up with a thicker uterine lining. Of course, this lining is what sheds during menstruation, so if you have estrogen dominance or excess, you may find that you have bigger clots because of this. And FYI, little bits of tissue in your period blood is normal, but anything bigger than around 2.5 centimeters would be considered a large clot. Next up on our list is long periods. A period longer than 8 days is a possible sign of estrogen dominance, especially if it's coupled with heavy periods or clotty periods. As we have already covered, the proliferation properties of estrogen could create excessive thickening of the uterine lining, resulting in more tissue to shed and potentially a longer period. However, it is important to note that other problems may cause a longer period, like hyperthyroidism, which is common with endometriosis, and low iron levels, which I see with 50-60% of my clients. I'll link to my episode on low iron levels and some resources on hyperthyroidism in the show notes. Third on our list is heavy periods. Similarly, just like the thickening of the uterine lining can cause clotty and prolonged periods, it can also cause heavy periods. But what would be classed as a heavy period? As rule of thumb, using more than 6 to 10 regular tampons or pads would be considered heavy. However, the caveat is that this is based on fully soaking these pads and tampons. And so if you're changing before they're at that point, you're probably using a few more than that. So just take that into consideration. The NHS also has some helpful guidance. A medically diagnosed heavy period would be classified as needing to change your period pad or tampon every hour or every 2 hours, emptying your menstrual cup more than is suggested, or requiring 2 period products like a pad and period knickers, not because you kind of want that extra security, but because you know you're going to bleed through them. If you're using a menstrual cup, you could in theory measure how much blood you lose. Losing more than 60 ml per period would be indicative of heavy menstrual bleeding, especially when coupled with longer periods, clots, or it's much higher than 60 ml. So to get specific, 60 to 100 ml would be considered moderately heavy, and above 100 ml would be considered excessive. Again, just as with long periods, heavy periods could also indicate problems like iron deficiency or even bleeding disorders, so don't just blame the estrogen. Next up is sore and tender breasts and even breast cysts. As we explored last week, as estrogen is our proliferative hormone, it helps breast tissue to grow and multiply. Additionally, it can influence water retention and cause fluid to be held in our breast tissue and the rest of the body, by the way. So yes, another sign of estrogen dominance would be swelling, puffiness, bloating, etc. And I'm sure a lot of you know what I'm talking about with that. When estrogen levels are too high, or they are not counteracted by progesterone because progesterone is too low in the second half of our cycle, our breasts can become sore and tender due to the increased volume. Finally, our next sign is fibroids, endometriosis, adenomyosis, and polyps. A sign that you may have estrogen problems is having one or more of these estrogen-related conditions. This could be especially telling if you had a few, like endo and fibroids. All of these conditions may be worsened by excessive estrogen levels. For example, let's look at polyps. Endometrial polyps are growths that protrude out of the uterine lining, so you can already see why overstimulation of the uterine lining could contribute to their growth. In fact, excessive estrogen is a risk factor for developing polyps, with estrogen treatments such as HRT increasing the likelihood of developing them. Similarly, prolonged exposure to estrogen can also increase someone's risk of developing fibroids, and they often shrink when estrogen levels are low for a duration of time, like say after menopause or when on hormonal medications that suppress estrogen. As many of you well know, whilst endo and adenomyosis aren't caused by estrogen alone, it plays a key role in the pathogenesis, meaning development, of the diseases and can aggravate them when it rises during our menstrual cycle. Does this make estrogen the enemy? Absolutely not. Estrogen is a really important hormone, and as you're about to learn, too low levels can cause some real problems. But if you want to dive a bit deeper into the benefits of estrogen, I've linked to another episode in the show notes that I recorded about 2 years ago. Okay, so that wraps up my section on estrogen dominance, signs, and symptoms. So now let's look at low levels. Again, there are a number of low estrogen signs, and I'll link to some great resources in the show notes for you to read more about them. But here are some common ones that I see with clients. Pink and watery periods. As you now know, if you have too much estrogen, you can have a uterine lining that is too thick. So too can you have a lining that is too thin in the case of low estrogen. This can result in period blood that is thin and watery and pale and light. If you're wondering what it should look like, usually we want a thick, syrupy texture that flows easily and is a strong red color. Next up is short periods. Following on from what we just discussed, if you have low estrogen levels, you may also have a short period due to the thin uterine lining. Medically, a 2-day period is considered normal, but in my training, we tend to prefer to see 3 days. The first two are typically the heaviest, and so if it tapers out on the third, that's okay. If you have a 2-day period and you struggle with any of these symptoms, it's definitely worth getting your estrogen levels checked. If you've always had a good 2-day period and you have no signs of hormonal imbalances, you're probably okay, but I would just check your levels in case. Next up is night sweats. When I was under-eating many, many years ago, night sweats were a frequent problem for me. I'd wake up dripping with sweat. If this is happening to you, especially in your follicular phase, it's a major clue that your estrogen is low. You might think of night sweats as a perimenopausal symptom, and you'd be right. But the reason why it's a symptom in perimenopause is because it's caused by low estrogen, and estrogen drops as we head into menopause. Whilst the exact mechanism is not fully established, one of the ways low estrogen can trigger night sweats is because it plays a role in temperature regulation in the body. Now, in case you're wondering why undereating caused low estrogen, if you're undereating, this stresses the body and the body sees it as an unsafe time to conceive. And so it suppresses the reproductive system. Additionally, a huge number of nutrients are required to make hormones and for an efficient menstrual cycle. And so when we're undereating, we're normally taking in too little nutrients. The end result, low progesterone, low estrogen, and lack of ovulation. Next up is painful sex. I'm listing this one because I think it's important to raise that your painful sex may not just be down to endo. Estrogen is responsible for the healthy thickness of your labia, vagina, etc., as well as the production of cervical fluid. When estrogen levels are low, it can result in thinning of this tissue as well as vaginal dryness. This can result in the area being more sensitive and more easily damaged, and can result in painful sex. I've seen this with a shocking number of clients who have been exposed to long-term estrogen suppression, such as when on Lupron. With these clients, of course, we have to work on re-establishing healthy hormone levels after Lupron, but often topical estrogen creams are required to repair the tissue and rebuild the tissue to healthy thickness. Okay, so as I said, there are a number of signs of low estrogen, but today is really about spotting some of those key signs and learning how to test for them. So we're not going to deep dive into every symptom today because there are many more. But as I mentioned earlier, I've linked to some further reading in the show notes on these topics if you do want to do more research. Just a reminder that this episode is sponsored by BU. These natural patches last for 12 hours, so they bring you prolonged relief and can begin working on relaxing your muscles before the pain kicks in, so you're prepared even if your period comes during the middle of the day. Some people even find that wearing them a night before their period can really help soothe the inflammation in the area. To shop, just head to the link in my show notes. Okay, now let's get on to testing. Like we discussed last week, the easiest to access estrogen test is a blood test from your doctor or a finger prick test you can order directly online without a practitioner. They are both the same test. They're a blood test, but the test by your doctor will require a blood draw, whereas the ones you can order online allow you to prick your finger and perform the test at home. If you want to order one directly from a company online, I've linked to two that I use with clients in the show notes. Remember, these are not affiliate links. I don't get any commission for recommending them, but I do trust their testing and their accuracy, and they have a team of doctors checking your results. Now, unlike progesterone, we are not testing on days 19 to 21. We are ideally testing on day 3, which is when estrogen starts to rise. Sometimes doctors will also test near your ovulatory window, which is when estrogen peaks, but standardly the test is done on day 3. If you are tested on day 3, the functional medicine optimal range you're looking for is 25 to 75 picograms per milliliter, but less than 80 picograms per milliliter. If your levels are above or below that, it could of course indicate estrogen excess or low levels. If you're testing during ovulation, we're looking for 150 to 350 picograms per milliliter. And if you want the exact numbers written down for you, they are in the show notes. So don't worry, you don't have to remember this. Now, just a reminder, these are optimal levels. In functional medicine, we use ranges based on averages from people with healthy hormone levels, whereas conventional ranges are often based upon population averages that include people with lower or higher levels. So your doctor may tell you your levels are normal despite having a host of symptoms that suggest otherwise. If you need to convert these numbers, I've linked to a great site that helps you to convert your estrogen units because they often vary from country to country. It's called Unit Lab or Units Lab, one of them. Now, the problem with this test is it doesn't tell you the full picture. Estrogen can be normal in terms of how much you have, but the problem behind your symptoms may be down to how it's being broken down by the liver. When the liver breaks down used up estrogen, estrogen is converted into 3 different metabolites, which are basically the end products of used up estrogen. These 3 metabolites are 2-hydroxyestrone. This metabolite is the healthier metabolite. We want more of this stuff. And based on Dutch testing ratios, which I'm going to get to in a minute, we want 60 to 80% of our estrogen to end up as this metabolite. The second metabolite is 4-hydroxyestrone. 4-hydroxyestrone has more estrogenic properties, so it can cause more of those estrogen dominant symptoms that I listed earlier. It has been linked to an increased risk of breast cancer and DNA damage as well. Based on Dutch test ratios, we want no more than 11% of our estrogen to be converted into 4-hydroxyestrone. Finally, we have 16-alpha-hydroxyestrone. This metabolite is proliferative and has been linked to hormonal problems like many of the estrogen excess issues I shared earlier, as well as breast cancer. We want some of this metabolite as it is protective for bones, but not more than 30%. You might hear of these metabolites as pathways. So you might hear me say that we want estrogen to go down the healthier pathway when it's metabolized. This means we want the majority of our estrogen to be metabolized into 2-hydroxyestrone. So how do we test for these metabolites? Urine testing is the best option. Not only can urine testing tell you what your estrogen is doing on day 3 or around ovulation, depending on the type of test you choose, it can also tell you what your estrogen is doing all month long. Last week, I told you about the Dutch test and their cycle mapping test. This one would give you a detailed insight into your hormones all month long, so you should track it every day. So, with the Dutch test, you can see what your estrogen is up to in more detail, but you can also see how it's being broken down by the liver. It will show you your exact ratios of 2-hydroxyestrone, 4-hydroxyestrone, and 16-alpha-hydroxyestrone, and it will give you what they should be ideally. But this isn't the only part of estrogen metabolism we want to check. The breakdown of estrogen into those three metabolites occurs in phase one of liver detoxification. The next step is phase two, and this is when these metabolites are methylated by the COMT enzyme. Now, the process behind this and all of the different things that can go wrong is a bit of a complicated topic and a tangent. So let's save that for another episode and just say that these metabolites are converted into yet another form, which allows them to be removed from the body in bowel movements. However, if this methylation process isn't working well, these metabolites can get stuck as they are and they won't be removed in bowel movements and can be reabsorbed and create those signs of hormonal imbalances. So the Dutch test and other urine tests will show you whether that methylation process is happening properly. If it's not, it could be to do with low B12, folate, or a genetic mutation. I recommend listening to my episode on low folate and B12 to get started on understanding this, and I discuss methylation more there too. But there's one more way estrogen could end up causing us estrogen dominant symptoms. Once estrogen has gone through phase one and two of liver metabolism, it heads down to the intestines where it is removed in daily bowel movements. The problem is there is an enzyme in our microbiome called beta-glucuronidase. In normal levels, it plays a role in keeping our hormones stable. But if it's too high, it can actually reactivate those ready to leave estrogen metabolites and make them shiny and new again and recirculate them into the bloodstream, creating higher levels of estrogen. It is common for people with endo to have higher levels of beta-glucuronidase, and in fact, it's been implicated in the development of endo. So you can get your beta-glucuronidase levels checked. It won't tell you exactly what your hormones are doing. Well, it won't tell you what they're doing at all. But if it's high, you do want to work with someone to get those levels down. You can supplement with calcium deglucurate to lower your levels. But the reason why levels got so high in the first place is due to a microbiome imbalance in the gut. So you need to work on your gut health to keep beta-glucuronidase levels down in the long term. Additionally, you don't want to supplement without testing, as you could send your levels too low and actually cause an estrogen deficiency, because as I said, it helps to keep our hormones balanced. Finally, last week for progesterone, we also talked about saliva testing. For estrogen, I'm afraid I wouldn't recommend it if possible, as it may be the least accurate out of all three types of testing for estrogen. And research says that the results come out as being lower than they actually are. If you're mainly interested in progesterone though, and it's affordable for you, it's a good shout. In terms of your test results for urine testing, the Dutch and any other provider or urine testing will provide you with a guide to help you understand your results. However, with the Dutch, it is quite complicated. So I strongly recommend that at the very least, you have your results reviewed by a practitioner. Okay, that's it for this week. If you've noticed symptoms of hormonal imbalances, but you would like some help working it all out, I did want to let you know that I have 2 one-on-one coaching spaces becoming available in the next several weeks. I work with endo clients one-on-one for at least 6 months to address root causes and reduce endo pain, gut health problems, chronic fatigue, and hormonal imbalances, to name a few. If you're interested in learning more, there is a link to my coaching page and the application form in the show notes. And remember, if you're not ready for personalized help or you don't have the budget for it, I'm still running my Endo Awareness Month Flare-Up Prevention mini email course. The link to sign up is in the show notes. Okay, see you next week. So if you found this episode helpful and you want to learn more about living well with endo or you'd like some further help, I wanted to remind you of the resources I have available to you and how you can work with me if you'd like to. So I obviously have hundreds of these episodes for you to binge on, and I do have 2 free columns. So one on Endometriosis Net and one on Endometriosis News, and there are countless articles on there to help you thrive. You can also sign up to my newsletter for tips and updates. I have a digital cookbook and nutrition guide, This Endo Life, It Starts With Breakfast, which you can download for just $9.99. And if you want to go that step further, I have short and budget-friendly masterclasses in nutrition, surgery prep and recovery, and natural pain relief. I also have a DIY course, Live and Thrive with Endo, The Foundations, which you can sign up to at any time at a really affordable price point, and you have lifetime access to. So you can go at your own pace and literally look back at it years down the line. This four-module course will provide you with the most effective yet easy to digest tools and strategies to reduce your pain, fatigue, endo belly, brain fog, and hormonal symptoms, and allow you to live your life again. Each lesson includes the core foundational needle movers that I have seen work for my clients time and time and time again. You get all the essential information that you need to be endo without the overwhelm. Finally, you can apply to work with me one-to-one. This is my most advanced and personalized offer, so I only take a handful of clients. To find out the details and the application process, head to my coaching page. The links to all of these resources and ways to work with me are in the show notes. And finally, to help others find this podcast and reach as many people with endo as possible, please leave a review and please share with your friends and family and subscribe.